Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Sasha Twining. On today's programme, we go in-depth into the world of amateur traders and hear what attracts the first-timers to the market and if they're likely to stay after the weeks of hype over the GameStop share saga. Plus, has beer gone rather flat? Major brewer Heineken announces plans to cut 10% of its workforce due to the pandemic. But the Barbie doll is looking remarkably perky. We hear an expert view on the rise in sales over lockdown.
Fashion dolls have never been so popular. What Barbie did also in 2020, and she tapped onto the unboxing trends.
More on those stories coming up. Now, the owners of the trading app Robinhood are being sued by the family of a young man who took his own life last year. The parents and sister of Alex Kearns allege the app uses aggressive tactics and strategy to lure inexperienced and unsophisticated investors. Robinhood says it was devastated by Alex's death and has introduced more support for customers. Trading apps have seen a huge boost in numbers recently. You'll recall the hype around the retail store GameStop as amateur and retail traders, that's those purely working for themselves, used social media chat forums to coordinate buying strategies. Well, in today's special report, we delve deeper into the world of the amateur trader, find out what's important to them, and if community-led investing on phone apps is here to stay. You will hear later from someone who was close to Alex Kearns before his death. But we're going to start with another amateur trader that we're calling Andy, who's in his late 20s and lives in the UK.
For me, it started as, you know, just a cheeky punt. It seemed like a socially distanced way of being an activist.
You know? And what about when you picked the trading app? How easy was that? I mean, what was the process there?
It was asking around a few friends who were already trading. So I went for a cash app, Revolut, a cash trading app. And they also offer stock trading on the side.
Have you done anything like this before? Have you ever done share trading before? Have you ever looked at the stock market before?
Not particularly. And the thing is, all the knowledge I have, it's regurgitated to me from Wall Street Bets, you know. So it's all just memes and word of mouth. But it's definitely something I'm not going to take part in again, just because of the amount of stress. And I don't feel like I've done a good day's work since Monday. And a corner of my eye, which is always, you know, looking at Google Finance. But I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to get a good return. Those spikes are coming. I know it. I mean, the payday is coming. So I keep telling myself. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely done. Just for my mental health.
That's Andy, still trading for the moment. So let's get the view from someone who is experienced in this field. And there's always an instruction manual for these things, isn't there? So we've found the woman who has quite literally written the book.
Hedge Funds for Dummies was the first book I did. And then the first edition of Day Trading, I think, was 2007. And it's been revised 4 times.
Meet Anne Logue. She lives in Chicago and, as well as writing the how-to guides for many years, regularly comments on the markets. So I asked her first off, can she explain the difference between the two descriptions we keep hearing, amateur traders and day traders?
An amateur trader is somebody who is jumping in, not necessarily with a plan, not necessarily knowing exactly what they're doing. A day trader is somebody who has a systematic approach to how they look at the market. They understand the risk that they're taking. They have a plan. They've tested their strategies, and they're committing themselves to a certain amount of time each day or each week to their trading. So the difference in my mind is how they're approaching the market. Are they approaching it seriously or more like a gambler?
I wonder how surprised you've been at the impact that the amateur traders have had on the markets recently.
I think it's fascinating. We saw a big increase in new traders in the market early on in the pandemic when a lot of sports were shut down. So people who would have been betting on sports started betting on the market. And the Robinhood app made it particularly easy because it had no minimum investment, and it was very easy for people to just place trades on their phone.
Who are the amateur traders, Anne? Is there a gender split or an age?
These amateur traders, they tend to skew younger. They tend to skew male. They tend to be people who have some extra time right now. They're people who are technologically savvy and who are comfortable with being on Reddit, comfortable with working through apps.
Do you ever see an occasion where these amateur traders, because of the amount of information and the amount of knowledge that they gain, will turn into fully fledged day traders and this will be their profession, their job?
I think some will. Day trading is a very difficult business. And there are very few people who are able to succeed in it, but there are some people who do.
More from Anne a little later. Well, one of them that has is Shay.
Well, this is the perfect time to learn to day trade. Here are the four steps to start day trading as a complete beginner.
She's known online as Humbled Trader and teaches others from her home in Toronto, Canada, with slick videos and over 500,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Hello.
Tell me, do I call you Humbled Trader or do I refer to you as Shay? What do you prefer?
I think you can call me Shay.
Tell me, how easy is it for others to be successful at what you do, Shay?
Very difficult. Most people will fail doing this. Like, it's been very, like, glorified as easy money. You sit at home, you wake up, and then you make thousands of dollars in 10 minutes. But that's just not the reality. Like, everyone starts out losing money. I started out, you know, trading part-time. First of all, as a hobby, I thought I was going to make a lot of money really quick. Obviously, that didn't happen. Lost a couple thousand dollars before kind of taking it more seriously and kind of trying to figure out how to like actually learn this. A lot of beginners, they'll have some beginner's luck, making some very easy money right away. And a lot of times, that's their downfall because they're going to give everything back in a week.
Shay, do you still lose money? Would you regard yourself as successful or are you still learning?
I still lose money. Like if we're talking about today, you know, oh, I lost $4,000. But from that $4,000 loss, that also came around with $11,000 gain. So it's all about like risk reward. It's kind of the risk management we're talking about.
Just finally, I'd just be really interested to know what your day is like.
So the market opens my local time at 6:30 a.m. and closes at 1 p.m. here. Like I sleep super early at 9 o'clock and I'll wake up at 4 a.m. to get ready for the market. I have a PC, like desktop, and with four screens, two brokerage platforms, one software for charting, two other softwares for like scanning and news. The most time I spent in front of the computer for the market is before the market actually even opens. So I plan out the trade, and after the market opens, I'm literally just clicking buttons to execute what I already planned out.
Humbled Trader, otherwise known as Shay, with the potential problems, but also the opportunities for some. Now, Shay has decided to trade purely in simple company shares, but it is possible for amateur traders to have access to more complicated financial products, like options. And what happens when that goes wrong? Is that their own responsibility, or should there be safeguards? Last July, with his university closed, 20-year-old Alex Kearns, who lived in Illinois, started dabbling in the markets. He used a widely available trading app, and at one stage it's thought he misunderstood the process and wrongly believed that he'd lost nearly $750,000. He left a note for his family saying he had no clue what he was doing and tragically decided to take his own life. Bill Brewster is married to Alex's cousin. He also works professionally within the industry and hosts a financial podcast.
I mean, he was so young that when I last talked to him in March of 2020, he was somebody that was really interested in what was going to happen with the economy. He was somebody that would talk to me about what companies were doing. And I think he was interested in finance for the right reasons. So I think that the thing that is the most sad thing for me is here's a kid that I watched grow up and find, you know, a passion, and, you know, now he's gone.
What do you think really went wrong? When you look back, what was the thing that maybe could have been different for him?
First off, the trade that he had put on had two sides to it. So he had a side that he was losing money on, and then he had a side that he was gaining money on. And the problem that I have had with how his exposure was displayed to him was he was only shown the side that he was losing money on. So he was only down, I don't know, somewhere between $3,000 and $5,000 that day. It's not nothing at all. But, you know, he wasn't down $730,000. And that was the number that was shown to him. And I just think that when you are on a platform, Robinhood specifically, in my opinion, if you know that you are growing and retail investors are the growth engine for that, and they are trading options, I think you really, really, really need to invest in customer service, because people will see numbers that they're not expecting to see. And it's a game that moves very, very fast. So you've got to be there to support them.
Well, after Alex's death, the founders of Robinhood promised to review their product and increase educational resources on the app. But should there still be more regulation, both on who can trade and how they trade? Or is the point of a free market the idea that anyone can get involved and invest their money in any way they want? Here's Barbara Roper. She's the Director of Investor Protection at the Consumer Federation of America, and she's also an advisor to the regulator.
I certainly believe that everyone should have the ability to invest. And in fact, people have a right to make really bad investment decisions. When we look at what we regulate, we try to make sure that they make those decisions in an informed way and that they're not lured into making bad decisions.
So what do you think is the way forward? What needs to be done?
It is way too easy for financially unsophisticated investors to trade options. But it's really profitable for the brokerage firms when they do. For them to make their money, if you're trading for free, they need you to trade a lot. It's much harder for them to make money if you're trading stocks. It's much more profitable for them if you'll trade in options. And so what we've seen is they build the business to sort of nudge you toward the practices that are profitable for them.
Barbara, are you saying that you want to see, I don't know, some sort of qualification that a would-be trader has to have before they are allowed to trade on the market? But doesn't that make it entirely unfair and actually goes against the idea of having a free open market that anyone could get involved in?
So I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying you could build, like if you're designing an app and you're going to allow options trading on that app, you could build it so that the investor has to go through, a little 5-question test that's focused on the risks of trading in options before they start trading. You're not saying they can't. You could put them through a process that's designed to ensure that they know what they're getting into.
Barbara Roper from the Consumer Federation of America. So what do the trading platform apps say? Well, we've mentioned Robinhood. That's the American one with 13 million users that's become synonymous with the GameStop saga. Incidentally, it's claimed 3 million people downloaded the app last month alone. But there are others as well, some limited to simple stocks and shares, some offering more complicated types of trade. And what do they say about this? Well, Marie Keyworth is the producer of this piece. Hello.
Hello, Sasha. So we've contacted the trading platforms mentioned in this piece to ask them for comment. Robinhood directed us towards a blog post saying it's short-sighted to proclaim that financial instruments integral to investment strategies of the wealthiest should be left exclusively in the hands of the old guard. And they went on to say it seems clear to us that the answer to the problem is not to limit access, but to find new and creative ways to teach people to participate responsibly. And finally, Revolut told us they don't allow customers to trade more complex or risky financial products like options.
So where next? What will the future hold for trading and those wanting a piece of the action? Let's get a final word from Anne Logue.
Last week, I had two people contact me saying that their teenage children wanted to take up trading, and what would I tell them? And I was like, uh-oh. The first thing I said was, don't let them do it. At least don't let them do it right away. What I suggested was that they go the route of learning about the financial markets now that they're interested in it, and that longer term, that will do them well.
Author Anne Logue speaking to me there. Well, joining us on the programme today is Investment Director Russ Mould from AJ Bell. Good to have you with us, Russ.
Thank
there
you,
is
Sasha.
Lots to talk about. First off, yeah, before we go any further, let's just get your thoughts on what we've just been listening to, the boom in trading apps and the different demographic that's now being attracted to trading.
Yeah, I mean, the company that I work for is seeing that. I mean, I think the lockdown and the fact that some people are better off because their costs have gone down while they're still working have accelerated long-term trends in saving. The governments haven't got any money, so relying on them for your pension is not a good idea. Interest rates are very low. Technology makes it easier. So I think it's accelerated all of those trends. And yeah, we are seeing younger and younger people come onto our platform all of the time.
It'll be interesting to see whether there is further regulation or indeed how
that's
going
to be very hard to achieve, I think. Yeah, that's going to be hard because in the end, the first piece of stock market regulation I can find in England is in 1734, Sir John Barnard's Act. So people have been trying to deal with this for a long time, but you can't change human nature. Fear and greed dominate the financial markets, and I'm afraid that's our nature, and they will always do.
I tell you what, an awful lot has changed since that legislation came out, though,
yes.
Hasn't it? We had some really interesting results out today. Let's just work our way through a few of them. Should we start with the auto companies, General Motors, Toyota, others as well? What do we glean from their results about the auto industry?
I think probably not quite as awful as we would expect them to have been, given what we've seen economically over the last 12 months. Toyota actually raised its profit forecast for the year, seeing that China and America had been particularly strong markets, I guess helped by fiscal stimulus from governments. Honda and Nissan also raised their forecast, though not by quite as much. Toyota said that it wasn't encountering a problem with a shortage of silicon chips. Honda and Nissan said that they were. So I think some companies are coping better with some of the cross currents that they're having to handle right now.
Russ, let's move on to something very different, dating apps. And of course, there are a few extra COVID hurdles now thrown in the path of true love.
How are you supposed to get out there when you're being made to stay in?
Dad!
Hello, young man.
And how are you supposed to cozy up when you're meant to stay 2 metres apart? Don't even get me started about kissing.
Now, that was a bit of an advert for Bumble, the dating app. Now, they're launching on the stock market tomorrow with their initial public offering, just ahead of Valentine's Day, of course. Now, this app tries to differentiate itself by having women make the first move. That's their USP on this one, Russ. I mean, is the course of true love running smooth for Bumble, do you think?
There's a possibility. It looks as if the company's going to be valued at around $8 billion US dollars, which is just under half that of IAC, which is already quoted and owns Match and Tinder. I think there's been some pretty good growth there because people have been trapped at home. They're still looking to make social connections. And again, as what you've said there about trying to help ladies particularly, it's made video and voice available so that you don't have to give your contact details to somebody on a first date just in case it doesn't work out. So there are some very clever technological wrinkles that they've been able to offer there.
Now, an area that has been very badly hit by the pandemic is that of beer makers.
Well, I'm having a drink.
I'm having a drink.
Yeah.
I want a disguise.
Beer.
Yeah, beer and disguise.
Cheers.
At the end of the day, mate.
About reaching out to people,
you.
Yeah. And, you know, even if you wanted to convince people about your point, the productive thing to do would be to sit down
and have a beer. Just engage.
You may have recognised that as an advert for Heineken. They are the world's second largest brewer, but they've announced today to cut nearly 10% of the workforce. Russ, what's been the problem there?
I'm afraid to say it's been the pandemic and the fact that the hotels and bars and restaurants and clubs have been shut down in large parts of the world over the last 12 months, so volumes have been weak. Take-home business has been good, but it's not been enough to offset the hospitality trade. Heineken actually made a loss last year, so in response it's cutting 8,000 jobs or 10% of its global workforce. And another big problem for the company, some of its biggest markets like Brazil and Mexico were quite late into the pandemic and are still finding it very hard to find their way out.
There is a lot going on there. Just finally, Russ, just looking across the markets, I know you look at lots of different companies. Is there anything else that's caught your eye that you'd quite like to mention?
I suppose an interesting one was Smurfit Kappa. It's an Irish packaging company quoted on the UK stock on the London Stock Exchange. It's actually just produced sales, profits and dividends all higher than analysts were expecting because it's front and centre of e-commerce and the consumer-led economy because it provides the packaging for all of the parcels that arrive at people's houses every day. And the shares are up by a quarter over the past year.
I think all of us are all too familiar with the amount of packaging that we're having to sift through at the moment with all the extra deliveries. Russ, stay with us if you wouldn't mind. We're just going to ask this question. Do your children play with dolls? Now, obviously, for many, Barbie is already a favourite toy, but it would seem their popularity has risen even further in lockdown. Toy maker Mattel says global sales of Barbie were up by some 16%, resulting in sales of $1.35 billion last year. It's the company's best sales year since 2017. Now, is it just lockdown that Barbie has to thank, or something else? Frederic Tutt is a global toy industry expert at NPD, the Research and Analysis Group.
We actually saw Barbie come back in the recent past, and 2020 was the perfect storm for her. In fact, last week, NPD crowned Barbie the number one toy brand globally across all the countries that we track. She's really reinvented herself, and I think she's more relevant today for today's girls than she's been in many, many years.
I had a quick look at their website earlier and I see that Barbie markets itself as having the most diverse lineup of toys. Talk me through that. Is that something that you've seen them in the way that they've evolved?
Absolutely. It's an initiative that started a few years ago where Barbie's shape changed. So she was not just made as a tall blonde girl. She was made as a small girl, as a very tall person, very skinny, normal body shape, or even large. And that was not it. They continued the reinvention by also changing the hair color and also the skin color.
Barbie is a very traditional toy, if I can put it that way. And she's up against the modern tech toys. And yet these figures would suggest that she's obviously her popularity is holding and growing. Why do you think that is?
Well, she's become aspirational again through the new way of putting across her image for kids and for parents. Yes, tech toys are doing well, but actually fashion dolls have never been so popular. We see those trends come and go, you know, across the years. But what Barbie did also in 2020, and she tapped onto the unboxing trends. I'm sure you're familiar with the videos that the kids keep watching on YouTube where children or adults unbox toys. And Barbie tapped onto that also in 2020 with a new line called Barbie Reveal. So what you had to do is put Barbie in water and then she would reveal who she was, what shape, what hair color, what skin color she had.
And so you didn't know before you bought her what you were going to get?
That's right, which is completely the opposite of what was before. You would actually buy Barbie because she was the blonde tall girl or the petite frizzy one or the afro. Now, this one, you didn't know, so you had all this anticipation and excitement actually revealing which Barbie you were buying.
And I think I ought to say for listeners who maybe don't have young children, these unboxing videos that are, as you say, incredibly popular, quite literally show people undoing toys and beginning to play with them. It's like a video review posted by, dare I say, ordinary people. We've obviously seen finances stretched during the pandemic. What sort of impact has that had on toy spend? Or are we still seeing parents still putting a priority on what they buy for their children?
We're really seeing, as you say, parents putting priority on children. In fact, in 2020, globally, NPD recorded an increase in toy sales of 10%, which is totally unprecedented. A lot of the growth came from the US market, but the UK grew, Australia, and a lot of countries also in Europe and China. So in this really tough times, parents have really prioritized their children and changed also the type of toys they were buying. And in fact, this also benefited Barbie because she sold a lot of expensive accessories like the Dream House, which was the best-selling item in the US market, but also the Dream Camper and so on and so forth, because these toys were providing hours and hours of play to play with the dolls.
Frederic Tutte, a global toy industry expert, speaking to me a little earlier. But surely if you're a parent, you are a global expert in toys anyway and what your children really love at the moment. And Russ Mould, is your daughter into Barbie dolls then?
Has been in the past, possibly a little bit old for them now, I think you'd say, yes. A bit too cool, possibly, now.
It's interesting, though, because it's obviously not just dolls that have done well in the pandemic. I mean, Barbie has stood out in this one, but all types of toy have, Russ.
Mattel, who own Barbie, actually flagged Hot Wheels, Thomas the Tank Engine, Fisher-Price as strong sellers. Hasbro, their biggest rival, has been flagging strong sales of everything from Star Wars figures to Jenga. So I think that the pandemic has been meant that parents have been looking for ways of engaging with their children, keeping them occupied. Mattel shares were at a 30-year low earlier on, just before the pandemic. They've more than doubled now in the last year. New management teams come in, done a good job with the product, and they've been in the right place at the right time.
It's interesting. We have done several stories before on the rise of the family games and the jigsaws and the things that don't necessarily also rely on tech, and how many old traditional toys, if I can put them that way, have also seen a comeback.
Yeah, Hasbro owns Scrabble and Monopoly, and I've lost count of the number of games of Tutopoly, which is a horse racing version of Monopoly.
We could go on.
The times we've played that, yes, we could.
Russ Mould from AJ Bell, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for listening. This is World Business Report.
$4 trillion. This is the size of the global private equity industry. Where capital is raised and how companies are funded is more dynamic than ever. The EY Next Wave Private Equity Podcast explores how private capital is fueling growth, driving innovation, and creating value for all stakeholders across the world. Listen today, wherever you get your podcasts.